Today on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel.
When I moved to the West, I realized that there was a lot of fear around wellness. To me, health was the freedom of being well rather than the fear of disease.
I love having you here because there are so many things that are misunderstood about Ayurvedic medicine.
So I'm going to break down a little bit of the term Ayurveda.
Okay.
Ayuhu means life and Veda means science. So it's the original science of life. Now, the science of life means everything that has to do with life and enhance our experience on this planet. The first principle that you would start on is understanding the circadian rhythms. Our bodies have certain neurotransmitters that are very connected to the cycle of the sun.
What is the most misunderstood Ayurvedic practice?
Consuming turmeric shots. Turmeric is never meant to be a shot that's going to burn your mucosa lining. Don't do it.
What if your body already held every answer you've been chasing? We live in a world where the first sign of discomfort sends us searching outside of ourselves, to Google, to the pharmacy, to the next trendy wellness hack. What if the key wasn't out there? It was in here, waiting for us to listen. That's what Ayurvedic, this ancient, often misunderstood science, is really about. Not quick fixes or exotic teas, but a way of remembering that our bodies are intelligent, responsive, and always speaking to us. The problem is, most of us have forgotten the language, and most of it is very misunderstood. Today, we're diving into a conversation with Niti Pandya, an Ayurvedic practitioner, writer, and speaker who grew up with this wisdom woven into her daily life. Her new book, Your Body Already Knows, a 21-day plan to decoding your cravings, reclaim your energy, and feel at home in your body, is not about following rules. It's about learning to trust yourself again. If you've ever felt disconnected from your body, if you've ignored the signals because life told you to push through, if you're exhausted by this endless search for balance, this is the episode for you, because maybe the most radical act of healing isn't adding more, but finally listening to what's been there all along. So sit back and please enjoy my episode where we get to the bottom of Ayurvedic medicine. Niti, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood, all the way from New York. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you for having me, Rachel. I'm excited for this conversation and to see what we can uncover.
Exactly. Well, I'm so excited for it too, because who doesn't want to look better, feel better? There are so many TikTok trends and everybody is into all sorts of new, you know, health, wellness, things that they can try. And everyone's trying it from like 13 years old to 75. So I love having you here because there are so many things that are misunderstood about Ayurvedic medicine and all the wisdom that goes along with it. So before we get into it, I want to hear about you. Can you tell us your background, where you came from, and how you found this to be your path?
Yeah. So Rachel, I grew up in Mumbai, India.
Oh, wow.
And I grew up in a joint family, and my grandfather was an Ayurvedic healer. So I often joke that it's my first language. So when you're raised with 15 people living in the same household, and the backbone of our lifestyle, what we eat, how we interact, being Ayurveda, you don't even know that you're learning Ayurveda. So to say, right, to somebody who doesn't understand what Ayurveda is, it is a system of life, of medicine, of prevention, of treatment, all of that comes from India. But what Ayurveda really understands is the rhythms and patterns that really make us human and make any living species on the planet living, right? The difference between me and my wax statue would be that I have breath, I have a heartbeat, I have a pulse. And Similarly, everything outside has a rhythm, like the earth has rotation, revolution, which kind of leads to life. So Ayurveda really understood these rhythms and patterns. Today, we call them circadian rhythms, seasonal rhythms, daytime rhythms, all of that. So I grew up understanding all of this, Rachel. I grew up with all of this gifted to me. And being a very sensitive child, the running joke is I always was curious about what makes people sick and what makes people tick. And when you're growing up with 14 people in a family, there you have your playground and you also have your research laboratory. Same stimulus, respond differently. I was doing this. I was preoccupied with this my entire life and I didn't realize it till I became an adult. And I did have a choice. I mean, this Ayurveda pulled me into it. I was drawn, sucked into wanting to do this, even at a time back then, 20 plus years, nobody understood. Nobody even knew the word. One out of 20 people that I spoke to in the US may have understood or even heard of the word Ayurveda. Today, I can safely say that at least in a place like New York or LA, 7 out of 10 people understand Ayurveda or have heard of Ayurveda. Mm-hmm. And even then, back then, I was like, I don't have a choice. This is my calling. Especially, I had some experience with pharmaceuticals, doing some marketing for pharma here. And I realized that the wellness system that I had been given at birth, that I was indoctrinated into, was really what needs to be brought back. So I was just pulled into Ayurveda. I got a formal education. I studied from the Sanskrit text. Sanskrit is the ancient language of India. So I really went back right to the source. I got that education for 6-7 years. And that's it. This is what I do 24/7.
So, oh my God, so much information there. First of all, you said it was like your language that you learned when you were younger. So explain that to me. Like, what does that look like when your family is different than our American families growing up with that as your language?
Oh, that's such a beautiful question, Rachel. So to give you an example, right? Like there's certain meals, everybody has a large lunch that's offered. Anything that's an indulgence, it's a treat, is offered at lunch. But let's say, Rachel, I were to ask my mom that, hey, mom, can I have cheese at night? Then, for example, the response that I would usually get is like, why don't you eat it for lunchtime tomorrow if you want to eat cheese? Now, here as a young girl, you're making so many connections. You're learning that your digestion is probably not the best. You're learning that cheese is heavy. And you're also learning that meals, that large meals or heavy meals can be eaten at lunchtime because probably that's when your digestion is more forgiving. So you don't realize that you're learning all of this as a young child. Or to give you another example, right? Like when I would go down to play and mom would say that, Nidhi, come back before you see bats weaving through the sky. I mean, those are the days you actually saw bats in the sky. Now, to me here as a young child, what I didn't realize from my conscious mind is I'm making a connection that, oh, human beings are slowing down their activity, right? Because it's dark, I can't see as well. But look at these other species, other creatures. They actually come out at night. This is their time to hunt. So you're understanding diurnal and nocturnal right there and then. Right. Or if we were like five girls in the house, you know, cousins and sisters. And when we would go out, my grandfather would, for example, specifically say to one of my cousins that, hey, Ruchi, you want to be careful when you guys are out in the sun, make sure you're drinking coconut water. Now, just in that statement, I have understood that, yes, whenever we go out to the sun, Ruchi gets all red on her cheek. She gets a headache. And probably coconut water is cooling and hydrating. So I was never told that, according to Ayurveda, you should drink coconut water because it's hydrating. I just understood that everything you're doing is making a connection. You're offsetting something, that people exhibit patterns and you live in a manner to offset those patterns. Even the daytime rhythms are just simply patterns. And everywhere in the world, whether it's seasons, whether it's your own body, you exhibit these patterns. And just knowing these patterns allows you then to understand how to live in balance.
Wow. Okay. That's fascinating. I don't think as an American, we grow up with any of that information at all. So a lot of what you're talking about is almost like what people hire nutritionists later on in life when they've struggled with some issues with either their gut or their weight or whatever to understand. You said you went to school for 6 or 7 years. So you're obviously learning about patterns. I'm assuming you're learning about nutrition. You're learning about skin or beauty. Like, explain what you're learning in those 6 or 7 years.
I love it. You know, Rachel, I'm just going to take a moment and say, I love that you're getting into this organically. You know, it's one conversation into another, because a lot of times people go directly into what is Ayurveda, and then it's hard to understand. So you're right. So I'm going to break down a little bit of the term Ayurveda.
Okay.
Ayuhu means life, and Veda means science. So it's the original science of life. Now, the science of life means everything that has to do with life and enhance our experience on this planet. So what are some of the things that we learn, right? So Ayurveda, which is often known for only its treatment and prevention of disease, but that's not what it's all about. It actually goes further. Nutrition, lifestyle, herbs, of course, fertility, childcare, social conduct, mental health, every single system in the body, digestive system, your respiratory system, your reproductive system, you learn about each of these systems in tremendous detail. So everything that has to do with human life, like how do you choose a partner? How do you set up for your profession? I mean, these texts are vast. There are so much information and there's so much wonder. And, you know, it's very precise too, by the way. So it's not like code that you have to figure out. Everything is just stated very clearly, very deeply understood. So it's a vast science and you basically learn all of this, including longevity and biohacking. There's a whole module, like there's a whole set of textbooks on that. So you basically learn about anything that has to do with enhancing your experience of life on this planet.
When did you learn that this wasn't just a like a cultural tradition, but this is something that you wanted to be your life's purpose?
So I realized when I moved to the West, Rachel, more than 20 years ago, I realized that the way I had treated health like a value system, and it brought me tremendous freedom. So health meant, and understanding these rhythms meant to me that, wow, I can eat my junk food. I know when to eat it. I can live my life however I want. And I know how to balance it. I have this sacred relationship with the rhythms and the patterns in the world and my body. And it just felt like a very romantic relationship. You know, it just felt really like health as a family member. You give it reverence, you know?
Yeah.
And when I moved to the West, I realized that there was a lot of fear around wellness. There was a lot of fear. It was not like, my joke is that to me, health was the freedom of being well rather than the fear of disease. And when I moved to the West, I realized that health was the fear of disease. And then I had to look back and say, how did I learn this kind of paradigm of health? Mm-hmm. And I realized that it was just ingrained. I was just raised like that. And it can be transported to others the same way. It can be taught that way. Then when this was the time, I mean, I was thinking about having children in my early 20s. And of course, this was before I had children, but I knew that I was going to have kids. I mean, I was always meant to be a mother. And I said, I cannot bring my children into this world without this wisdom. And the only way to be this wisdom is to embody it, is to stand for it, is to teach it. And I did all of that. And today I have two young teenage daughters, and I can tell you they understand these patterns and rhythms. They live in New York City. They live completely modern lives, but they're very much in touch and they understand these rhythms and patterns really, really well. Wow. So I think that became my really deep calling. The contrast that I found in the West made me want to go back to my roots much more.
Right.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. ForHers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit ForHers.com.
Okay, so you've explained Ayurvedic. I'm sorry that I don't pronounce it the same way you do, because it sounds so pretty when you say it. But when, so you've explained it sort of in broad terms. Are there sort of like core principles or tenets that people need to know about it so that they can really identify what it is that you're talking about?
Yeah. You know, I want to give you two ways of doing this. So firstly, when you talk about, like, for people who are just wondering what in the world is Ayurveda, If you've heard of turmeric and you've heard of ashwagandha and you've heard of oil pulling or dry brushing or bullet coffee or even intermittent fasting, all of these practices have their roots in Ayurveda. So just to give you context of like, hey, this is that parent science where these practices have emerged from. But if I have to point out a few tenets and say, hey, you know, you wake up today and you say, I want to start living Ayurvedically. Mm-hmm. What does this mean? And I'd say, of course, like, it's a lifelong journey and it's a very fulfilling journey. It's not like, oh my God, this work never ends. You almost feel like, I want more of this because it allows me to feel whole. But where would you start? And I think the first principle that you would start on is understanding the circadian rhythms. Like, circadian rhythms is a very new concept here in the West. But if you look at the Ayurvedic texts and in the detail in which they explain, it's not just day and night. It's six phases of the day. And if you want, we can go into the six phases, or I can just start by saying, keep your lunch heavy. Keep your dinner light. Know that we are diurnal mammals, right? Which means that we are not tigers, we are not bats, we are not owls. We don't have nighttime vision. And before electricity came into our world, 1930s, that's so recent, 1930s, we did not have these big time night dinners so much later than sunset, because we were not lighting all these oil lamps and saying, oh, let's have dinner parties. Once in a while, you would have a midnight feast, but you rarely ever did that. So it's basically going back to understanding that our bodies have certain neurotransmitters that are very connected to the cycle of the sun. And so you want to eat your heaviest meal for lunch, lightest meal for dinner as early as possible, and start honoring your sleep cycles. And if you've started doing that, you've already set a great baseline, because that one rhythm will correct many other rhythms. Your bowel movements, your menstrual cycles, many other rhythms will be corrected when you start doing that. But if you have to bring in a second tenet, you know, just going to start very simple and easy. The second tenet would be that you want to look back into the evolution of mankind and realize, and when you do some research, just even on simple search function on your computer, you realize that when we started using fire to cook our foods is when we became humans. And evolutionary biologists have actually studied that. And they've realized that, oh, we were a different species. The reason why we became these standing on your legs, using our brain intellectual species is because when we started cooking our foods, our gut became smaller, our brain became bigger. So I would say you want to start cooking your foods using good fats and good spices. And if you just did these two things, that's it. You did nothing else. Cook your foods, good spices, good fats, heavy lunch, light dinner. And you did this for just 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I can tell you for sure, you will notice a drastic difference in how you sleep, how you wake up, how you feel, your energy levels, your skin, and your bowel movements.
Wow. Okay, wait, I have so many questions. So you talked about the sleep cycle. What is the right sleep cycle? Are there a certain amount of hours you're supposed to get, or is it about the sun? And what, like, tell me about that.
Yeah. So I will say that some people need sleep a little more, a little less. Those who think that they need the most sleep, who feel very sluggish in the morning, they actually need lesser sleep, because their body can get into a slug very, very quickly when they're sleeping. All their fluids in their body, their synovial fluids of their joints, their mucus lining, everything thickens very quickly.
Okay.
But anyways, right? So basically what happens 2.5 hours after sunset, about 2.5, 3 hours after sunset, and given that sunset is at 6, 6:30, and I'll tell you how this looks different in the winter and how this looks different in the summer. Okay. But let's say you're living in a place and time where days and nights are about equal. About, you know, 2.5-3 hours after sunset, your neurotransmitters in your body start looking drastically different. Now, in the daytime, we have something called excitatory mediators, which means you're serotonin, you're stimulated, you have more energy. And then over those 2.5-3 hours, they kind of shift completely. So chemically, we're different beings. You know, we have more melatonin, our body's trying to produce GABA, and you know, other neurotransmitters, which are to do with deep rest and repair. Mm-hmm. And now you want to be in bed as many nights as possible by 10 o'clock, because between 10 and 2, and Ayurveda understood this, by the way, way before modern scientists, that exactly these 4 hours, 10 to 2, is when magic happens in your body. You're basically sitting and you're basically chilling in your bed, like not giving a damn about the world. Yeah. And your body is doing the deepest level of repair in your digestion, in your hormones. It's you know, letting go of old cells that don't serve you anymore. It's regenerating new cells shortly after 2. Your liver is doing its detox. But more than anything, thought generates debris. Even thinking generates debris in your nervous system that can actually be seen under a microscope. So the animals don't have that. They're not thinking. But human beings are thinking all the time. And your glymphatic, not your lymphatic, your glymphatic system activates during those 4 hours. So those 4 hours are critical for everybody. Now, very often, Rachel, I want to say this, very often you'll see people waking up to urinate or in a sweat around 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. It always happens between 1:30 and 2:30. Mm-hmm. That usually is kind of the end of the cycle. It's not super healthy for that to happen. But if it does happen to you, it's kind of also a little bit of a signal that maybe your liver is too heavy, like liver is too hot, not heavy. Liver is a little bit hot, but it usually is the end of the cycle. And your body like really needs to actively detox. So you'll sweat out or you'll need to urinate. After 2, between 2 and 6:30, between 2 and 4:30 more, new cells start to regenerate. Your growth hormone has a surge. And like it's next level of creation. The building happens. Repair is done, building happens. After 4:30, people enter into a lighter realm of sleep. For women, they should ideally stay asleep during this time. Hmm. Men can wake up for a spiritual practice after 5:30. Women should ideally sleep till about 6. Now, in the winter, we need a little bit more sleep, because we are kind of hibernating, but we're not hibernating like bears do. We hibernate from like, you know, we sleep a little, we need a little bit extra sleep to preserve your energy. That's why you eat more fatty foods in the daytime, in the winter months, and you would sleep a little bit earlier. Not like a 3 p.m. if you're in Iceland, because your body also has an internal body clock that is built, that is designed to adjust to these changing seasons. So mm-hmm. The internal body clock, called the endogenous clock, actually remembers behavior and then allows you to still sleep at that later time, maybe 9:30, 10, but you would sleep a little bit more in the winter. Now, if you're in a place which is really hot, and like Morocco in the summer, really, really hot. And it's very, very dry, hot and dry. You would ideally take a nap in the afternoon. So the siesta is legit for those months only, not throughout the year, for those really hot months. And then you could actually stay up until a little bit later. So sunset is at 9 p.m. You can stay up for another 2.5-3 hours after that.
Okay, so it's important that you're sleeping during those periods. Like just laying in bed from 10 until 2 is not going to do anything for you. You have to turn off your mind. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so if you're not in a full sleep, right? But let's say you're meditating. Like I have clients, Rachel, who are like, oh, I cannot fall asleep. I'll say, okay, that's fine. You do something called a yoga nidra or do an active relaxation. So your conscious mind, your prefrontal cortex, and your frontal cortex is all shut down and mm-hmm. you're kind of into a deeper breath. As long as your body is in a parasympathetic state, it will activate some of that repair. So even if you're not sleepy, don't watch a crime thriller on Netflix.
My favorite thing to do. Yeah. So I'm probably not doing the right practices here. Why has it been so misunderstood or diluted in Western culture, the things that you're talking about? I mean, I've definitely heard of intermittent fasting. I've been to spas where they do the dry brushing, but you know, they kind of just say, oh, this is good to prepare your skin for a lotion or so you don't have cellulite, or I don't even know what it's for. And I always end up buying it because it all sounds good, but I don't really feel like I see any results. So tell me about those things.
Yeah, I love it. So I will say that the reason why, Rachel, these are so misunderstood, because You know, we are so hungry for information. Yeah. We don't care about wisdom anymore. We don't care about knowledge anymore. Like, knowledge is annoying. Wisdom is a deeper knowing. But like, give us information. Tell me what's good for me. When somebody asks me what's good for my digestion, my answer is, it depends on what, where your digestion is. Like, somebody says, tell me what's good for the weather. I'm like, depends on what the weather is. You know, yeah. Like, you can't wear a winter jacket to like summer weather. So similarly, our body has its climates. And but we are so used to asking this question, like, give me anything that's good for me. Well, we want a quick hack. We want a prescription. We don't want to go deeper. And one of the reasons why these are so misunderstood is because we are not asking the why. We are in. We are in this crazy rush to try the next trend and say, give it all to me. We are in this FOMO, fear of missing out, that, oh, if it's good for me and if I don't do it, I'm going to die. But if you look at blue zones and you look at those places where people live for over 100 years in a healthy manner, they actually had very few practices. They had limited foods. They didn't even know what was happening in the world out there. Like, they just lived with their limited, and they had minimalist lifestyles. Mm. They lived so well, you know? So we are just... We become obsessed in the modern world of, you know, with prescriptions, with the next new thing and the next fad. And because we don't ask the question and we adopt some of these practices in an extreme manner, and then we suffer. And then now, like, for example, intermittent fasting, Rachel, intermittent fasting was so good. Mm-hmm. And now it's become so bad because we've not understood what it does. So we've not understood how to do it correctly. The truth is, intermittent fasting is brilliant for some people. The truth is, intermittent fasting, if it's done just like the day and the night cycles where you don't eat after dinner, is good for almost everybody. Mm. But if you do an intermittent fast of 16 hours not eating during the day, it can actually really damage some people. It can really affect your microbiome. So any of these practices, there needs to be a deep understanding of how they are to be practiced and only then taken up if you want to do it right and get the correct results out of them.
Okay. So, and while we have you on that subject, what would you suggest for people? Because I've had people on the show that have said when they wake up, they only drink coffee. They try and go as long as they can to not eat. Then they have one meal, then they don't eat again. It sounds like that's very harsh on the body, but what do I know? So tell me what the right way to intermittent fast is.
Yeah. So as human beings, we are intermittent fasters to begin with, right? Because I mean, our ancestors, like I say, in the 1800s, they didn't really eat after dark, right? Like, they didn't really do much after dark because they really didn't light oil lamps and say, hey, let's do this all over again. So that period, right, where you kind of stop eating a few hours after sunset, or like really at sunset, depending on when sunset is for you, and then you start eating again after sunset. Yeah, ideally 48 minutes after sunset. After sunrise, you should wait 48 minutes because that's when the microbiome adjusts itself. That's when your neurotransmitters have changed hands, and you know, the morning daytime neurotransmitters. So your body is not working on this changing, you know, changing guards. Think about it as changing guards. So working, the change of guard has happened in those 48 minutes, and then you start to eat. Great. If that is the intermittent fasting you're doing, everyone can do it. I feel like you have a question. I'm going to.
Yeah. I was going to say, so essentially intermittent fasting, I mean, it sounds like work to me, but if you say, okay, no snacking after you eat dinner until you wake up the next morning, essentially that's what we're talking about. But are you talking about eating earlier, like close to when the sun sets, as opposed to having these 9 o'clock dinners? Eat earlier, do not snack after, make that your lighter meal, as you already said. And then you go until the sun rises 48 minutes after you have breakfast. So you are of the belief that breakfast is important. There's a lot of people that say, do not eat breakfast. What are your thoughts there?
I will tell you what is important, right? Breakfast is not your biggest meal. That's for sure, right? Because we are diurnal mammals. The sun is just coming out. And so are our gastric juices. They're just about, the body is just preparing for digestion. It's not fully ripe for digestion.
Okay.
Now, that does not mean you don't stoke your fire. You know, if you're making a bonfire, you would like start it slow. You would stoke your fire. And there are a few ways to do it. Like, there's a body oiling practice that, Rachel, you're going to hear one day, somebody's going to be on your podcast talking about this body oiling practice, because it's going to be like the next biohack, you know? So you oil your body in the morning, and that kind of really helps your microbiome, promotes lymphatic drainage, regulates their nervous system, promotes the synthesis of vitamin D. I mean, it does a lot of things, forget that. But I'll say, so that is breakfast. That is your first breakfast, is oil. Skin is a channel of consumption.
Okay, wait, before you go further, is there a certain kind of oil? And what do you mean? You just rub oil on your body like it's lotion?
Yeah, so I'll say what the practice is called. It's called Abhyanga. Now, it's okay, you never have to know the name of the practice because, of course, Abhyanga, it's a complicated name. But it's an Ayurvedic body oiling practice. And what it means is before you exercise, or even before you shower, if that's uncomfortable for you to exercise with some oil on your body, I get it. Mm. Before you shower, yeah, I know. Mm. I see that look because it is... It can feel like that. But if you see wrestlers in India, you'd see they have all oil on their body. It protects your joints. It really gives you, it helps you to recover after you've exercised really, really well. Great recovery tool. But so as you would put moisturizer on your body, you would take sesame oil. And if sesame oil is not for you, take any body oil, as long as it's a clean oil and it does not have anything added, no added fragrances, no other phthalates, nothing. Okay. You massage your body with it, whether you're doing it for 5 minutes or 15 minutes, it matters, but it's not that important. But do it even for five. Then you can wipe down your body with a towel, with a dirty towel, the towel that you can use for this, put on your workout clothes, go work out, and then come back and shower. Now your body will be nourished and detoxed, and you'll have quicker recovery. And that also becomes the first way to kind of give your body strength. Skin is a channel of consumption. It's your first, it's your pre-breakfast.
Right.
After you shower, it is important to do, it's a warm, my recommendation is a small warm beverage with something really little. Like for me, my breakfast every day is a hot cup of milk, spiced milk, with I soak my almonds overnight and I peel them in the morning and I have my 20 almonds.
Do you have regular milk or you have almond milk?
I have regular A2 organic grass-fed milk.
Okay.
That's what I have. Okay. And I know that's a whole other like misunderstood conversation, but that's what I have personally. Mm-hmm.
But some people could have hot tea with lemon, or are you saying it just needs to be something warm, or do you believe that milk is the thing they should start the day with?
The thing is that you have high cortisol in the morning, right? We wake up with high cortisol and, you know, a little bit of higher sugar because you, of course, like your body uses cortisol, adrenaline, sugar to keep you awake. Otherwise, you'd be sleeping. All of us wouldn't be inspired for life. So your body needs to inspire you for life. And you want to bring that down. You want to settle that in the morning. And magnesium is known to do that. I mean, Ayurveda knew a long time ago that the best foods in the morning are milk and almonds and, you know, certain other foods. So you definitely, if you're not doing dairy, you want to do some kind of food which has magnesium, which is warm. You want it always warm because your body's metabolic activity is warm, right? Nothing can be metabolized unless it's warm. Unless it's warm, how can it transform? You don't want to refrigerate your gut in the morning. You put things in the refrigerator only when you want it to not break down.
Right. But a lot of people will say, oh, I start the day with coffee. Is that good enough?
I would say that coffee can feel like a little bit of a nuclear storm if it's a black coffee to your system, right? I mean, we feel it right away. You feel the nuclear storm. Don't believe me. I tell people, don't believe me. Use your logical brain. Like, never, ever believe me. But just when you think about black coffee, for example, right? It feels it's hot in your system. What is stimulating? It's dehydrating. And the word dehydrating is hot and dry. And here you are trying to warm it up, give it some fuel, hold your fire. And here you're like, it's like a matchstick. You know, it goes on. The fire comes on, psh, and it goes off. And that's what stimulates you. And then you're like, completely, you've lost it. You're so tired that you need another boost of caffeine. If you want to do coffee in the morning, I'd say make it a cappuccino. Bullet it. So give it some dairy, give it some butter, give it some ghee, give it some coconut oil, but have a bullet coffee in the morning. So you're bracing for that impact, you know? So I personally tell people, listen, for the most part, I like to work with what people want to do, but just say, how do I balance this in the morning?
Okay.
So breakfast is not the biggest meal for sure. Like breakfast like a king was a 19th century nutritionist who said that. It's not an old concept. Our ancestors didn't have the biggest breakfasts.
Got it. And then from there, your biggest meal becomes lunch, or you have something else in between?
So if it's fruit season, I'll pick up fruit every now and then. If I've had a good workout, then I'll have something. It'll always be warm, but I'll have like a warm moong lentil, you know, moong lentils. I'll have a warm moong lentil crepe. Sometimes I'll have a little bowl of oatmeal or another type of porridge.
Okay.
And it'll be very little. And then I will, you know, everything in your body is set up for a bigger lunch because your ghrelin, which is your hunger hormone, has risen. Your body is insulin. It's very sensitive to insulin, which means like you're like breaking sugars down like anything.
Yeah.
gastrin, which is, you know, one of the key players for digestion, is high. And this happens literally only in that afternoon period. Like, all of this comes together. Like, it's perfectly designed for digestion. So your biggest meal between anything I want to eat, anything I've dreamt about, fantasized about for food, is always for lunch.
So do you have a belief of what people, of diets for people? I mean, I know you studied a lot about nutrition, as you said. So do you believe in this keto only or high protein or no carbohydrates, or what is good for us?
Rachel, I 100% I can say I believe, but I actually know, right? I've studied so many diets all over the world, and I'll say every macronutrient is important in your body, right? Like, carbohydrates are important, proteins are important, fats are important. Every micronutrient, which our ancestors did by fermenting their foods, by adding seeds and spices, every traditional culture you go back did all of this. Like, okay, they fermented a few things. They like added spices, they added seeds. All of those, they gave us our micronutrients, and they kept our foods whole, and our body is whole, and it responds to whole foods, especially when consumed together. It's not enough to say, I'm going to have carbs, I'm going to eat my proteins, and I'm going to eat. You do it whole. Mm-hmm. And your body knows that system so well. So when people, I have dealt with people who said, I did keto. I have many clients, right, Rachel, for example, they said, they will confess that, listen, I felt really good when I was doing keto for like, I recently I worked with somebody who did keto for 10 years. And then I said, so why are you coming to me if you felt good? She says, because after those first 5-6 years, I had severe dysbiosis of the gut. And now for the last 4 years, nothing is working for me, right? Because eventually, right, I say the first function of food is not to nourish you. The first function of food is not even to give you nutrients. The first function of food is to protect the environment of your gut. You may say this is the biggest superfood in the world, but if it is going to hurt the climate of your gut, nothing else can actually thrive in there. So it's like this. If you think of a backyard, right, and you say, I'm going to plant this seed, which is actually going to lay, you know, this tree is going to actually have gold coins on the tree. But if it's going to damage the entire soil, it's only a matter of time that very tree that you've planted is also not going to be able to live.
Right.
So the soil, the flora and fauna, the microbiome of your gut is the most important. So the first function of food is to protect the environment of the gut so that you can get the most out of the subsequent foods you eat. And doing these harsh diets may give you support like weight loss sometimes or muscle building at some point, but they're absolutely going to hurt the environment of the gut.
Right. It's interesting. When I wake up, I'm not really a big breakfast person. And maybe at like 10:30, 11, I might have like an egg or something. But yeah, there will come a point that if I don't eat, I'm super nauseous out of nowhere. I get like overwhelmingly nauseous and I have to stick something in my mouth, which obviously makes it difficult because then I haven't like planned for this. And so it's like a piece of string cheese or a nectarine. And I don't know anything about nutrition, so I don't know how one thing is affecting me versus the other. All I know is it takes away my nausea. So to me, I feel like that makes me healthier, better, whatever the word is. Although maybe that's not doing the right thing. It's just taking away the nausea, but it's changing my gut around and not preparing me for whatever is healthy going forward in the day. Do you know what I mean? Like, the point is I feel like the more knowledge you have on what you put in your body probably sets me up for a better day than just sticking something in my body so I'm not gagging.
I love that, right, Rachel? So well said. Because what you're doing is treating a symptom. Mm-hmm. And now your symptom is treated and you're feeling like, hey, now I feel balanced and that's good for me because I'm balanced. You're right. But the truth is that the symptom did arise, that the body gave you a reaction, that the acids came up, because when your fire was starting and burning out in the day, like I said, you know, it's a fire starting time and it had nothing to eat. You didn't give it any food to eat. So when it didn't have anything to eat, it's like, you know, it's like this asking for help. But if you had eaten before that, right? And that it wouldn't be aggravated.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think Americans especially have a very distorted sense of healthy. They think thin is healthy. They think overly thin is even more healthy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really terrible way to have our minds wrap around what we're eating, because all we're looking at is how thin we are on the scales. And that doesn't probably ring true for what you're talking about as healthy.
You know, that is so true. We started using our eyes as like this primary sense, right? Mm-hmm. But the truth is, like, all our ancestors, and the reason why they were more intuitive, more connected, more fertile, more, you know, even more sexy in like the literal sense, was because they were using the sense of their nose and their ears and touch so much more. They gave those senses, which are basically more feminine senses. The ear is a more feminine sense. The touch is a more feminine sense. And here we've become obsessed with just what we see, visuals, aesthetics.
Right.
And being thin is actually very drying inside the body, being excessively skinny, right? When you, like, look, some people, unfortunately, they have a problem putting on weight. And, you know, I personally, you work with oiling practices, et cetera. But otherwise, to do it, you know, to actually drive yourself to that place because we think it's aesthetically appealing is very dangerous for the body. And in fact, even like even when you look at like attraction, a male-female attraction, like they've done studies to prove that men are not attracted to that, right? Like because really what we did as the reason why we're here on the planet is for life to exceed on the planet, for procreation, and evolution happened that way. But the more voluptuous you are, the more flesh you have, you know, the better your body is designed. In fact, the better your fertility is. And it doesn't mean that you have to have excessive tissue that doesn't suit you, but there's a moderate somewhere in between. And that moderate actually even makes you more fertile because we need those excessive, like those good fluids in the body for the sperm to survive and for the egg to do what it needs to do.
Right, right. Okay, let's get to your book. Your book is called Your Body Already Knows. What does that mean to you?
What does that mean to me? That that deer know that they need to wake up in the morning, no alarm clock needed. They go and they graze on the same patch of grass without complaining, with perfect joy. Tigers are nocturnal. They will never get carried away to wake up at 5 a.m. and practice yoga. And nursing mammals will select certain plants. They will sniff and select certain foods and plants that are galactagogues so that they can nurse better. And if you ever have a pet or a dog, and if they're wounded in the wild, they will go and find the sulfur-rich soil and they'll roll their bodies in the sulfur-rich soil. Every species on the planet knows what they need to live and thrive. As babies, we were born using our mouth, which we had never used before. We didn't know what this organ was, but we knew that this is what we use to get nourishment from our mother's breast. We already knew that. We'd never seen a breast before, never used our mouth before, but we knew to do that. Somewhere along the way, we've become so overly intellectual that we've lost our instinct. We've had so much information that we've lost our insight. So my book is a framework to take you back, right? It's not enough for me to say, oh, your body already knows, listen to your body. Because that would mean I'd be like, oh, my body wants 3 bags of chips, or my body wants to eat like this big ice cream. No, because we're so far away from the intelligence of the body that we need a framework to get back into it. And the book, Your Body Already Knows, is a promise that your body knows, because every species knows, but it's a framework that will allow you to go back into that deep intelligence.
It's so interesting that you say it and you put it that way, because you're right. Animals do know all this stuff. And if you dropped me naked in Ghana and I had to figure out something, how to save myself, I would have no clue. You know what I mean? But these animals that have far less intelligence than we do to figure things out, seem to figure it out, seem to get through life in a healthy way and manage aches and pains and all sorts of things. And it's astounding how they do that and how they know, and there's so much instinct. We have forgotten instinct in modern day completely. And we're just fascinated with what, you know, science tells us and what TikTok tells us. And so in you saying that, I've forgotten that is true. Like, we do not go off of instinct at all. The only thing I can think of is, you're right, when you're a baby, there's instinctual things, or like when you're pregnant. And this baby's coming no matter what you're trying to do, and your body knows how to have that baby. You probably don't even need the doctors there. It would happen with or without them. But that's the only thing I can really think of. And death, I guess. It's these natural things that happen. Otherwise, our minds get involved and we take over and probably ruin it all.
That is so correct. Our mind, which made us human, our intellect, is what is making us subhuman today. It's really what got us here is also what's causing our peril.
Right. All right. You talk about a 21-day plan. Can you give us a little bit of the hacks or whatever? Do people actually follow a 21-day plan while reading your book?
Yes, Rachel. And I also teach the 21-day program. And I cannot even tell you, it's my most satisfying work of my life is doing this. The 21 days are very simple, doable actions. You keep stacking them one after the other. Like, for example, I said one day, you know, I take you to this place where you kind of eat a heavier lunch, lighter dinner, but I teach you how to do it. I teach you what problems you might face. I teach you that, hey, this is how you might feel in the evening. So it's it really sets you up for success day by day, just reconfigures. I don't need you to add extra hours to your day. I don't need you to kind of move to the Himalayas. I live in New York City with two teenage daughters, and I can do it. And I can work with hundreds and hundreds of clients to do the same. So those 21 days allow you to make sustainable shifts in a manner that's going to change and transform your life. What we found, Rachel, we've gotten, I cannot tell you the number of emails and letters and messages that I get on a daily basis of people telling me that so many treatments they tried, you know, whether it was a full panchakarma Ayurvedic experience in India or like a full allopathic treatment, going to modern medicine doctors, doing acupuncture. But what they found doing this 21-day, the baseline shift that happened, one of the few things you notice is that your weight will become more optimum. So, you know, you will never, if you think you have excess tissue and you're not trying to get it off, it'll just get off. It's not, you know, it's not your choice. You're going to come back to an optimum weight. You are going to notice better sleep, better skin, better menstrual cycles, better bowel movements. And some point, somewhere in your, like when you're in your 21 days, somebody in your ecosystem or even sooner will tell you, you're looking different. Like something's going on with you. And like, this is what I even tell my clients. I said, don't tell anybody that you're doing a program. Like, just keep it to yourself and see the feedback that you get, because the changes are so internalized and sustainable that you don't really feel like you've shifted anything. It has to feel natural.
Wow.
And, so people are like, yeah, so they don't feel like they've done a lot. It's not a lot of effort. But once they get the feedback, they realize the big shifts that they made.
So it's a lot that has to do with nutrition, it sounds like. Tell me more of, are there, by the way, whenever I go to a spa, there's always like an Ayurvedic side to it or some different things you can do. Is lymphatic massage part of that?
So it's not something part of the 21 days. I've only taken the biggest battles. I am definitely, Rachel, for anti-gimmicks, like no marketing gimmicks, right?
Okay.
Everything that you see in the commercial world out there is those things from Ayurveda that can be packaged and sold. Yeah. But there's the biggest battles don't need to be packaged and sold. They can happen for a very reasonable amount in your kitchen, and you can live a really long, healthy life and enjoy everything that a human being should enjoy. And I'm very much about that. The Ayurveda that we see outside, like I said, it's very prescriptive. So dry, the massage, the dry scrubbing, it's not a bad thing, but it's not one of the biggest battles you want to fight.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
It's also not all nutrition. Yes, there are rituals. Yes, there's a way to exercise. And I change that around as well for people.
Okay.
There's also a lot, big mental component, mental emotional component that comes into play, because your mind is your driver. Your body is just your car. If your driver is not doing good, matter of time, he'll crash the car into something.
Right. Okay. So I'll let people read the book and not give away too many of your secrets so that they can get that and start that. It sounds really interesting. I want to try it. Are there things, because you said that a lot of this stuff is packaged up and gimmicky, are there things that you are like, oh, that's a good thing you should do? Like, is there a certain facial or is there a certain kind of oil that you really like for your skin? Or I don't know. I always see these things where they're dropping oil on your forehead. I mean, I don't know. What should we like and not like?
I think if there's four things that you've seen on TikTok or any of your social media channels that I think everybody should try, and there are very few instructions around, is one is tongue scraping.
Okay.
Oil cleansing. So don't use soap on your face, especially if you're a woman after 30. Cleanse with oil. So oil cleansing is a big trend, again, from Ayurveda.
Wait. I don't get that. I've seen that. And to me, that looks gross. Why don't you need to cleanse your face?
You will see the difference it makes. You use oil to take off your makeup and cleanse your face. Oil is the only substance which enters into your pores, pulls grime out, right? For example, like Rachel, if you dropped a little bit of oil on your table, right? After some time you come back, you'll see like it almost looks dirty, because what it's done, it's picked up all the grime and the dirt. It's detoxified that place. And like, how did this oil become dirty? Because it really does that. But also it goes into your skin and it nourishes the pores and it detoxes you.
Okay.
It's Like, I cannot tell you, I've started like doing more, because I myself was like, oh, I should probably use soap. And a couple of years when I started using, like doing just oil cleansing, I've not had one thing. I mean, that's my main maintenance for my skin.
Oh, I love it. Okay. So it's not going to make you break out this week.
You try for yourself. Like, it's like,
try it today.
After 30s, right? If you're a woman who's 17 years old, like, even though my 17-year-old daughter does it and she loves it, but I'm saying if you're 17, it's not for every 17-year-old. But anybody who's above 30, I would give this a shot. Oil pulling, which is oil pulling for your teeth and your gums, for your cavities. I mean, if you don't like to visit the dentist, then you better oil pull.
What is oil pulling? I don't even know what that is.
Oh, I love you. Probably not on, like, you. I can tell Rachel that
clearly I'm not on TikTok. If I asked my daughter, she'd be like, duh. Okay, what is it?
Which I love, really. You're like, you're saving your brain. Rachel, so you basically take a spoonful or a mouthful. Look, the traditional way is a mouthful of sesame oil. The modern way is a spoonful of coconut oil. Okay, I'll be honest, but you can take whatever. Just start somewhere. But the traditional way is a mouthful of sesame oil. And you take it, like, this is what I do. I take it into the shower with me and I'm swishing it. You swish it around. And then you'll see that the consistency of the oil has changed and it's become a little bit watery. And then you spit it in the trash can.
Okay.
And then at your next visit to the dentist, the dentist will ask you, are you cheating on me? Like, do you have a new dentist? Right? Because you'll have less plaque, your cavities, like no cavities. If you have gum issues, you'll see a lot of them gets resolved. It's just...
Okay. And this is something you're supposed to do every time you get in the shower every day? Or
I don't do it every day. Look, it's a daily practice. I'll be honest, Rachel, I don't do it every day.
Okay.
I do it 3 times a week.
And it matters what kind of oil? You said sesame or coconut?
Sesame or coconut. But I would try both. Okay. See which one works for you better. So I said the oil cleansing, the oil pulling, the tongue scraping.
Yeah.
If you've seen the tongue scrapers, it takes like 5 seconds. Everybody can do it. It stimulates your tongue, your taste buds, cleans up, you know, it's like gunk that comes as a residue of digestion.
Yeah.
Then the last practice that I would say you want to try is using face oils, you know, like instead of moisturizer, if you can switch to a face oil, which is a lot of face oils right now, because oils replenish the microbiome. They balance the pH on the face.
Okay. I think growing up, we always thought you should never put oil on because it'll make you break out. But I mean, I've been seeing oils be sold everywhere. Like, that's the new thing for sure.
Ayurveda loves oils for the last like 5,000 years. We love oil in Ayurveda. It's just like, we don't have it. There's nothing second that comes to oil. Look, oily skin, right? And the reason I understand why people associate oils with breaking out, because when you're breaking out as a young teenager, you have oily skin. Yes, you're breaking out.
Right.
But the truth is, even that oil accumulation is helped when you use another oil that you help that can pull out excessive grime to the surface and then you wash it off with water.
Right. Okay. Lastly, to wrap up here, what do you hope this book gives people that no other wellness book can?
And I absolutely feel the book is very, very different. It gives you the power back. It gives you access to your cellular intelligence and allows you to live with ease, not fearing your wellness, just enjoying being well.
Got it. And here's just like 3 rapid fire questions. What is the most misunderstood Ayurvedic practice?
I would say consuming turmeric shots. Turmeric is never meant to be a shot that's going to burn your mucosa lining. Don't do it. Put it in your foods. Do it with dairy, not as a shot.
Okay, good to know. One thing you would never do based on your training?
Wake up and drink a cold smoothie, protein smoothie.
Interesting. Okay, and what is on your nightstand?
Oh, a lot of oils. It has my nose drops. It has my face oil. It has my magnesium, topical magnesium, probably 5 other types of oils.
I love it. Okay. All right. Your Body Already Knows is out now. You can find it. Tell people where they can find it. What bookstores?
Anywhere that you can find books, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, hopefully any other bookstore that carries books should carry Your Body Already Knows.
Amazing. Where can people find you, follow your work, all that stuff?
People can find me on my website, which is Nidhi, and my last name, Pandya.com, NidhiPandya.com. They can also find me on Instagram, my_Ayurvedic_life. That's a really long name, but if you just look for Nidhi Pandya or you go on my website first, you'll find my Instagram from there. And I am offering an Ayurvedic nutrition course that starts in October 2025, in case this podcast is released before that. And if you're interested, check it out.
Amazing. We will put something in the show notes so people know that. Nidhi, thank you so much. This has been so interesting, so informative. I'm definitely going to get your book. I'm going to try it and I'm going to keep in touch with you and let you know how it goes for me. But I appreciate all of your advice. I think it's amazing. And I'm so excited to hear the feedback from our listeners. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Understood.